I'm a zombie! I've been bitten!
You're listening to the Survival Podcast for zombie nerds everywhere. Is Zombies Ate My Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Zombies Ate My Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Murphy, and joining me, as always, is the busy zombie lord, Lou Page. How's it going, Lou?
I forgot about the night vision thing that they did in the early 2000s that drove me crazy.
Yeah. There was certainly some flashbacks happening there, and I thought, are we watching Quarantine or Record or Rec or whatever, however it's called? But no, we watched 28 Weeks Later, and Lou and I, funny enough, before the show, discovered the reason we couldn't watch 28 Days Later this week.
Yep.
Anyways, we'll talk about that in a little bit. I did want to apologize. This episode's a week late because I had to move some stuff around, and Lou and I are both busy, so whenever we have an opportunity to have an extra week to take care of things, it's like, yep, sounds great.
Yeah, no, Ryan reached out to me, and I was thinking about reaching out to him because I had too much going on last week, and then he reached out and he said, I got too much going on. And I was like, oh, good, I'm glad that you're calling, you're messaging me and let me know that you got too much, because I got too much too.
So we are back, though. We're here. We're going to record a show, and we've got lots to talk about, and by lots, I mean it's kind of pretty quiet, honestly, outside of the movie we have, only a couple news stories. But yeah, with that, let's get into the news.
The virus has completely devastated over 150 of the world's major regions and then is spreading rapidly.
All right, Lou. First up in the news, this is going to become pretty common, but we've got HBO's The Last of Us Season 2 has found its Manny, Mel, Nora, and Owen. So four additional castings since our last episode. And have you, anyone stand out from this list for you?
I know who the, looking at the photos, I know who the last chick is. She's been in a bunch of stuff I've watched with my wife.
Right.
But other than that, I don't really know any of the others.
Okay. Danny Ramirez is familiar as he played a character in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. That's what I recognized him from.
So he's going to be playing Manny. You've got Ariella Bearer as Mel from The Runaways, another Marvel project. And then Tati Gabrielle from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina as Nora, and Spencer Lord from Riverdale as Owen. So, you know, this show is obviously filming right now and probably releasing early 2025, if I had to guess. This is part two.
I'm guessing they're going to break it up. I'm guessing we're going to get like five episodes come this time next year, and then we'll probably get another five more close to the end of the summer or something like that. I'm not sure how many
You think so?
I don't know how many episodes season two was scheduled for, but I'm guessing we're going to get half and half.
Well, they have talked about splitting the story of part two into two seasons. I don't know if they've given like the specifics of what how many episodes they're going to do, but I read it as, you know, 8 to 9 episodes per half of part two.
I'm trying to remember. Didn't they do the first one? Didn't we get like 4 or 5 episodes and then they did like a month break and then they came back and they gave us the other 5? Because I remember we talked about it and then it wasn't continuing. There was like a break and then they came back. I'm trying to remember.
No, it was weekly.
Was it? Till end?
Yeah, we took our time covering it, I think. But it was, as far as I recall, weekly.
Was it? Okay. Then maybe we get this all at once. But I think this time next year at the earliest.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I would imagine we don't even get our first trailer until late this year.
I think by Christmas we'll get our first trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to that. So as we have more casting news, we'll talk about it here. We have one more story for today's episode, and I thought this was pretty fitting. And this is off the press sort of tales of the latest animated Marvel project, X-Men 97, that revival. But animated Marvel Zombies series is for sure a TVMA show, says Marvel's head of animation. Which is great.
It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be. There's no way they could have done it otherwise. For them to do it otherwise would have been to do it at the service. And being TVMA, I don't think we're going to get like swears or a ton of adult content. I think it's just going to be a little gorier than we're used to. And I think we might get a little bit more language than we used to, but I don't think it's going to be like somebody dropping the F-bomb every 5 minutes. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I agree with you. If I recall, the What If episode that was Marvel Zombies was fairly tame. Like, it was definitely not TVMA.
No, but they won't be able to continue on a whole show that does that.
Exactly. They were pretty creative with that What If episode. So in terms of, like, keeping it a zombie film or a zombie theme Yeah, so it's really interesting. So the fact that they are going TVMA shows that they are willing to adapt something and do it properly. I agree with you. It's going to be gore, for sure.
The new Daredevil show, I believe, is going to be TVMA, which it was not. I don't know if you have heard the rundown, but they had pre-written and already done something like 5 episodes, and then it got sent to the execs and Kevin Feige, and they reviewed it, and the whole project at that point was scrapped, and they brought in a new lead writer and producer to run the show, and they brought back both Foggy and Karen from the original Netflix show, because they said that the new show was not TVMA. It was like basically like PG-13-ish, and that it didn't work, and it was missing core elements that made the Netflix show a success, and that they've been that's filming now. So to hear that they're not doing this with the animated stuff doesn't fully surprise me, but yeah, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. I as you said, it would be silly to try and stretch a PG-13 zombie show across 8 or 10 episodes, whatever they're ending up doing. It's one thing to do it for one 20-minute entry. To try to stretch it is just it would be too much to handle. And you're right. Like, they, you know, even before Daredevil, they've been dabbling with the TVMA. As far as I know, all of Echo was rated TVMA.
I have not watched that yet, but I heard it was MA.
Yeah. And that is mainly violence, right? Like, I think that's and probably some strong language. So
violence and gore is what I understand. There is, I guess, a few curse words, but it's really tame, I guess. It's very much in the Marvel Knights violence category.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we will have Marvel Zombies on Disney Plus this year. We will certainly be talking about it. I am stoked. It'll definitely be one we keep an eye on.
Yes, we will.
Once it's out. So look forward to that. We will have more news soon, I'm sure. I think from what I've heard, there's rumors that they're targeting Halloween, which again makes sense. So seems like a no-brainer, to be honest. but yeah, with that, let us move into our main topic.
We're heading into District 1. Although District 1 is completely safe, outside the security zone, London remains large number of bodies still left to be cleared from the original outbreak of infection.
Lou, 28 weeks later, the sequel to 28 Days Later, released in 2007, it's not a 20 anything type film. The synopsis is, 6 months after the rage virus was inflicted on the population of Great Britain, the U.S. Army helps to secure a small area of London for the survivors to repopulate and start again, but not everything goes according to plan. It would have been a short movie if it did. Lou, you and I watched this film because we wanted to watch 28 Days Later and didn't get that opportunity. And we found out just before the show, we were kind of digging a little bit and we were like, I wonder if this information is available. And turns out on Wikipedia, I mean, Wikipedia, like, it, can it be trusted? In this case...
For the record, I looked at Wikipedia after our last episode to try and find answers, and that wasn't there.
Okay. Yeah, this is new.
So this was added literally like in the last month.
Yeah, so this is so basically digital availability. So by 2022, 28 Days Later had become unavailable on Disney-owned streaming services. So it was no longer available. It must have been obviously 28 weeks later is still on Disney-owned services. I watched it on Disney Plus here in Canada. Lou, did you end up watching it on Disney Plus or was it Hulu?
I watched it on Hulu.
Okay. So still a big Disney stake. But then in February 2024, so not too long ago, it was revealed that producer Andrew McDonald had bought back the rights to the film from Searchlight, which is a Fox affiliate, promptly selling it to Sony along with the upcoming sequel 28 years later. So that's why we don't have it on any streaming services, because this deal was just sorted last month.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because I was going to say, I know for a fact, like maybe 2-3 months ago, it was being marketed to me on something, like it was available. And so when we wanted to look for it the other night, and it was the other day when we recorded, and there was nothing, I was like, that's weird, because it was everywhere like 2 months ago. What's going on? So to know that the deal just got struck, that's why we're not going to get it. It's going to show up, I'd say before the summer, we probably get it streaming somewhere.
Yeah, and Sony has like a bunch of deals in place with Netflix and actually, funny enough, Disney Plus to stream their content, and it kind of comes in waves. They've got like a first look and then a second look sort of deal with those companies. So it will be available at some point, as Lou said, probably this summer in anticipation of the sequel 28 years later. Now, we obviously don't know this answer, but when it comes to 28 weeks later, the fact that he didn't bother to buy that back, I mean...
I don't think he has the rights to this. I think this was made by Fox Searchlight. So I think he probably would have bought it back if he had the rights.
Right. But like, from watching 28 weeks later and remembering 28 days later, does 28 weeks later feel like a... sequel? Obviously, Danny Boyle and Alex Garland, the director and writer, were only involved in a producing capacity. But did you not get the sense that it was like this is not a proper sequel, if that makes sense?
I got the feeling that they weren't involved in this, but it was being made by people who were.
Right.
Like, so it feels like a sequel. Everything is implied as a sequel. But it does feel slightly off. I'd say the only thing that's a good, big selling point for me is all the actors in it sell me on it. Mostly because at that point, a lot of them were unknowns or minor quantities. They weren't the big names that they are now. Like, I don't remember watching this and remembering that Idris Elba was in it. Like, I don't even think I knew who he was.
Yeah.
Like, when I first heard his voice, I was like, oh, whoa, I forgot he's in this. Oh, that's right. I did remember that Robert Carlyle was in it.
Yeah.
Mostly because I remembered that running scene in the beginning.
Classic.
That's the thing about this movie I remember the most, is that whole opening scene where he has to run. And I remember watching this in 2007 in theaters and being like, yeah, I'd be dead.
Yeah, because it's the first sort of rendition of the Fast Zombie.
Well, 28 Days Later was, but this was a continuation of that. And in this, 28 Days Later, there was always some place where they could get away or they could hide or whatever. And this was literally him running through an open field. And I'd be like, yeah, no, I'm dead.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. 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 It's going to be hard to separate the two, but the fact that we've skipped straight to the sequel, I guess the feeling I'm trying to like describe is that there are certain sequels that feel like in a boardroom at Hollywood, it's like, we need to build a sequel because the first one was successful. I'm not saying 28 Weeks Later is necessarily a result of that, and you can see it in its quality, because I actually think the film it's better than I remember it being.
Same. I agree 100%. Yeah. The things I didn't like about it in the past, I still don't like.
Okay.
But they didn't bother me as bad. And they weren't as long as I remember them being years ago when I've seen this movie, I think, two or three times at this point. I think this might have been my fourth watch at this point. The first time I watched it, I won't say I disliked it, but I was kind of like, it was a movie. The second time I watched it, I knew who more of the actors were, and I was kind of more excited to see it a second time, and was like, oh, I like that. And then the third time I watched it, I was like, that's a pretty good movie. And this time watching it, I was like, yeah, no, I could definitely add this to my routine of zombie movies I watch on a regular basis every couple of years. Again, the thing that deters me in this movie is I've never liked the night vision thing. It mm-hmm. doesn't scare me. It just annoys me. I get doing it for small portions of a film, but I remember it in this movie being like, oh my God, will it end? Oh my God, will this end? Can we please have daylight? I'm sick of walking around the dark with night vision. You're trying to scare me. It's not scary. Stop it. And I still feel that way, but it's not nearly as long. I remember it being like 40 minutes of the movie and like me beating my head against a wall. And it's really only like 15, 20 minutes.
Well, yeah, there is a portion of it, which I was surprised because it reminded me of, remember when Game of Thrones had that episode in their last season that was like everyone gave it a hard time because it was so dark, you know, you couldn't see anything. And this film has sequences, as you said, probably 10 to 12 minutes where it's like it's dusk or past dusk, like it pretty much,
yep.
It's nighttime and it's really hard to see. And I don't know if it was the transfer or what have you, but like it was pretty grainy as well. It was kind of hard to I watched it on Disney Plus, but it was still hard to like pick out scenes. Like everything kind of blended together. But I mean, it's realistic. I mean, that's what happens at night, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So it's hard to fault it.
It's hard to fault it. I've just seen other movies do it better. And again, I don't like the night vision thing, but that's a personal preference. I'm willing to forgive it since I know it's a thing that I just don't personally like. Like if they had done it and it had been like a 5-minute sequence while they like ran through a room or something, like I would forgive it, but it just feels like it's too long. But again, that's my biggest major gripe. My biggest takeaway, the thing I've always liked since the first time I watched it, was I didn't really know who Jeremy Renner was the first time I watched this.
Right.
And I liked him as a character and I liked him as an actor. And then when I rewatched this time, I was like, oh, that's right. I've always liked his character in this from beginning to end.
Yeah.
So
he's the good guy. Yeah.
He's the good guy. And he does such a good job with that role. Cause in the wrong hands, that role could be misconstrued as somebody could rub you the wrong way if they're too good. And he's just good enough that you believe him. There's just something about that role that's just, he was perfect for it.
Yeah. There's also a bit of a worry, especially set up early in the film that he could be the, you know, it's kind of stereotypical. Oh, the Americans are here to save us, like rah, rah, America. And they set up a bit of that at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you recall this from high school history, but I have these vivid memories of learning about World War I and World War II in high school history, and specifically, you know, the era of World War I when the United States of America joined the war effort. halfway through. And the stories that the American soldiers didn't know what they were getting into and were still subscribed to the idea that, you know, glory of war, this is going to be great. Oh, man, it's amazing. And everyone's around them, like, you know, just outside no man's land saying, like, what are you guys doing? Like, we've been doing this for 3 years. This is not a party.
Yeah.
And you kind of got that sense that they were setting, they were kind of, maybe I'm giving the film too much credit, but like, they were kind of like setting that up a bit with the American soldiers, like, man, when are we going to see some action? This is the most boring thing we've ever done, you know? Yeah. And they're like watching people through their sniper scopes, you know, as their like entertainment.
I don't know if it was intentional, but that was the same vibe I got from it. They may be soldiers, but they haven't seen the chaos that is on the other side of this wall.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then once they do, and once the chaos ends up on their side of the wall and the shit hits the fan, they quickly realize, oh, I'd rather it have been boring.
Yeah. Yeah. It does quickly fall apart. And I had completely... So my mind, I kind of thought that this movie was sillier. And that was the main reason people hated it in comparison to 28 Days Later.
No.
But it is quite serious. There's one scene that in my mind I remember as like being the sort of catalyst for it being a silly film. And that was the helicopter scene where he basically like mows down a bunch of zombies. I don't know how realistic that is. That's probably the silliest part of the movie.
That's the silliest this movie gets.
Yeah. And... But they treat it seriously.
I remember never thinking that the movie was silly. I remember the first time watching it being like, it's a meh movie, because it felt like it was rehashing too much of the first film.
Right.
If that makes sense. And I wasn't quite sold on her just being a carrier.
Yeah.
And I was also like, the scene where she it basically infects her husband. I kept thinking, why would you do that?
Well, I mean, so basically the start of the film, Robert Carlyle runs away from his wife, leaves her to die. They before that, they're saying like, oh, I'm so glad our kids were overseas on that trip. So glad we took care of that. And it like from a setup perspective, it's there are a lot of like coincidental happy accidents that happen. You know, I know you and I. There are probably four or five moments in our lives that immediately come to mind of like, man, if I had just decided to do something a little differently, like we wouldn't even be doing this podcast, right? Like, right. There's those little things. So it's such a human moment to have that conversation of like, could you imagine if we hadn't have got the paperwork done for our kids to go overseas on that school trip? And it's like, no, it's done. They're safe. We're here. We're surviving. And then he promptly abandons his wife. And just
see, that's the other thing that I remember distinctly, like being annoyed with at in the beginning of the film, is I love the scene where he's running away, and they totally try to make you feel like he's a bad guy for running away.
Yeah,
but those things are fast and strong and vicious, and he didn't even have anything to defend himself. I don't want to say he's a coward for running away, but he had to make a quick decision, and he made a quick decision, and he has to live with that for the rest of his life. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's a coward, but had he run into that room, he'd probably be dead.
Yeah.
Like that's the way I view it, is we forget that he hesitates for half a second. And then as he turns his back to run away, four more run into that room.
Yeah.
And it's it's like, had he gone to go help her, he'd have been dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. If he had gone in there, he would have been dead. But I think that...
And with her, the kid, if she had gotten away with the kid the way he was going and climbed out the window, then her and that kid would have had to have run across that field to catch that boat. And would they have made it? I mean, honestly, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I like to think that he tries to make up for it when he gets to the boat and he jumps in the boat. He really is trying to help that other guy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And then when the ones get in the water and they grab him and he realizes it's over, you could see the relinquish in his face that like, man, I wanted to help, but like, I got to save me too.
Yeah,
And yeah, I remember the first time I watched this, I was so mad that I was like, oh, great. We're going to get this guy. He's going to be our hero. No. And then this time around, I was like, you know, I'm a little more empathetic to him than I was the first time. I'm older now and I have more perspective. I'm a little more sympathetic to his character than I was the first time.
I mean, I think you're right in the sense that it's a very interesting setup of a scene where, like, he can do the heroic thing and try to save his wife and die.
We hadn't done dead decisions yet. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We've been presented with this situation a dozen times, and I've now had to think about how I would handle it. And I want to say I'd be the hero, but when your brain has to do that calculation, I think this situation is over. Me stepping in just means I'm going to die. It makes you think twice.
And he definitely, you know, the way they illustrated it, he definitely thinks about his actions. And I think up until that point, he does take out a few runners. But you get the sense that it's always the way that the virus works is it's not like The Walking Dead where you can coat yourself with it.
It's like 8 seconds, I think it is.
It's very much.
The other thing, too, is I understand the wife's hesitancy that she wants to save the kid, but the kid clearly brought them there.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
100%.
And I would want to save the kid, but if push came to shove, I don't know if I could save a strange kid over my own hide.
Yeah. Well, he made that choice.
If it was my kid, absolutely.
Of course. Yeah.
Some random kid that I don't know and I don't know where he came from and I don't even know if he's telling me the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, he did just say, like, you know, my parents have been following me. Like, he has been running from these other zombies or whatever. So, like, he straight up says, like, oh yeah, like I led them here. And I think the beginning, so when you think about this whole, like, the whole zombie genre, like, I think that they came up with this idea of, like, how do we set up the recovery of Great Britain, because it is an island. They close it off. Like, they kind of set up the story as, like, okay, the zombie virus is done. We're going to bring back the refugees that were all around the world that weren't in Britain at the time. Everyone's dead. And we're going to reset everything up slowly and safely via a NATO-led sort of effort, with the US sort of taking the lead on it. And the way they sort of, they set up these layers to kind of bring the virus back, with Robert Carlyle discovering that his wife is still alive after, of course, the kids. The one problem I have with this film is it has multiple moments of kids doing stupid shit that they shouldn't have been able to do. You know, like leaving the quarantine zone with the United States of America military guarding these posts, and they see them leave and they still let them go. It's kind of like, I get, so I maybe you can explain it away by, like, oh, you know, these are British citizens and they get to do what they want, you know, we can't force them, but then they still bring them back. I don't know.
I think when I originally watched this the first time, that was the thing that bothered me, was that the kids seemed to be getting away with way too much.
Sure.
And it was kind of just hand wavy. And I think now I've seen enough films like this that I'm willing to forgive it. And the acting is so good, I'm willing to forgive it. But yes. I think the first time I watched it, I think that annoyed me more than it does now. I think I've seen too many bad seasons of The Walking Dead at this point. So I'm willing to forgive a little bit.
You're right. Like, there's definitely worse examples. And it's not. So the way they set up the world is they are fairly certain that all the infected are dead, to a degree of, like, they've let them all starve out. And that's the other thing about these types of zombies, the rage virus, very quick to spread the virus, and it just spreads like wildfire. But it is because of that, if everybody gets infected, there is no way to spread it if everybody dies. And I don't know if you noticed this, Lou, but, like, the infected can be killed like a normal human, you know?
Yes.
Like, they... out, like, outside of, I think, again, that helicopter scene comes back to mind. There's like a sniper scene where they're taking them out, just shooting them in the chest or the arm, or and they occasionally are getting headshots, but for the most part, it's body shots.
These are zombies, but they're not living dead zombies. The people are still alive. They have to wait for them to starve out and die.
Yeah. So basically they wipe the slate. So I can kind of understand as like, oh, these kids are leaving to, we'll keep an eye on them until they're in danger, because we're not going to be the big, you know, big government and put them in. They end up scooping them up and putting them in a detention center anyways, or a detention zone, but they kind of let them go. And I guess at the moment I'm like, well, they feel as though the outskirts they're 95% sure it's safe, right?
Yeah.
But then they find their mother, and I don't know if you got this sense, and again, like, this is my second time watching it, you know, split between, you know, a decade and a half. But like, she was surviving. She was, I guess, a little bit sort of feral, a little bit like, you know.
She was half crazed.
Yeah. Like, did you get the sense that that was because of her aloneness, or?
They indicate that she had been alone for so long, that she had been eating and doing things to stay alive, that maybe had done something to her mind.
Sure.
Like, yeah. It was indicated that maybe she ate people to stay alive, or rats or something to stay alive. And, you know, she might not be right in the head.
Yeah. But then, like, when you kind of think about it a bit, you know, if she survived that long, and London very clearly had, like, a rebuilding moment, like, it's hard to, unless the virus does, because there's, so essentially she's not immune, but there's something in her biology that's blocking sort of the rage component of it, turning her into this monster, but she can still spread it through her saliva and blood.
Right.
So I wonder if, like, again, like, hand wavy, it's like, okay, she is like this, like, A, because she's been left alone for so long, and B, she probably, she is a carrier. So she's not a full-on rage monster, but maybe she is something in between, where she doesn't really have control of all of her, because she did get bitten. We did know that, but like, I don't know. I they don't explain it, and she's not around long enough for the doctors to kind of figure out what went wrong, because of course it all goes to hell pretty quick. And it's not even the military's fault. The military, Idris Elba's like, you can study a corpse. Like, she's infected. Protocol states we have to neutralize her. And the movie also doesn't, like, at least at the beginning of the film, doesn't paint the U.S. Army as, like, the bad guys. They never, I think throughout the film, they don't really, like, obviously the U.S. Army is doing bad things near the end, but, like, they are just trying to contain the virus, I guess. Like, they're not really protecting anybody once they realize, like, it's done. We gotta hit the reset button, which is a bit dark, but for the most part, like, they are struggling with their choices as well. It's also funny that Idris Elba, who is British,
is doing an American accent.
Yeah. I mean, he's so well known for it.
And I forgot that he did it. So when he opened his mouth, I was like, wait, is he going to be a British general, or is he going to be American? And then he opened his mouth and I was like, yeah, that's he's doing his American accent. That's disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, because you could hand wave it and you could have him be, you know, I'm sure there are British soldiers stationed elsewhere in the world, like, that could be of a high enough nature to be there making decisions. Like, I find it hard to believe that there's not one British person of authority in the film. Like, really, there's no one. I know Rose Byrne is also, I think she might be Australian, but she's also playing an American, is she not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's Australian. So they bring the wife in. She is obviously clearly suffering. And then the husband, who spends a good portion of the start of the film saying how he controls the place. He's got access to everything. He's got so much access, he can let himself into a secure military containment zone and see his wife. Once he finds out his wife is alive, he apologizes. And she says that she loves him. And then they obviously it's interspliced with the doctor saying like she's still infected, she can still spread the virus via saliva and blood. And then they kiss and they make a very good point of like, you know, let's not do a traditional movie kiss. Let's make sure there's some saliva. Okay. We got to see
it. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So they do that. Did you get the sense? So this was also a question that entered my mind. So she is considered a carrier, and these are questions they never answer, but I'm going to ask you, Lou, did you get the sense that she was purposely trying to spread the virus to him?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think she intended for him to infect everybody. I think her intention was, he's in this room alone with me. I'm going to infect him. And after I've infected him, someone's going to come into the room and shoot him.
Right.
Like, I don't think her intention was to infect the rest of the facility. I think she just thought, I'm going to give him a taste of his own medicine. And boy, did that backfire.
Well, yeah, because she is killed in the process. But I guess.
And also, at this point, that's the thing that makes you question her sanity. Right. The person they brought back might not be all there.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm getting at is, like, did you feel like this was sort of a setup of, like, not necessarily like an evolution of the virus, but an unintended side effect of the virus of, like, this person has something in her biology that's blocking the full-on rage, but she's still a carrier. Does she still have, like, the need to spread it, maybe?
Maybe, but I think that still does happen. People become carriers and the virus doesn't affect them. That happens.
Oh, well, we've seen it. We live through it.
Yeah, well, there really was a Typhoid Mary, I believe. So, I mean, she didn't get typhoid, but she could give it to everybody.
Right. So, I guess, like, but, and yeah, I understand that, but I guess my question is, like, did you get the sense that she was
intentionally, like, she had the urge to spread it?
Yes, like, biologically, she felt the need.
I don't think so. I think it was revenge. I think she was still mad at him for leaving her behind like that.
Oh, and I totally understand that side of it, too, right? Like, she knows something's wrong, so, yeah. No, I get that, and he is infected in such a spectacular way.
If anything, I think that's probably the weakest aspect of the movie. We don't understand her motivation for why she causes the outbreak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that to me, that's kind of like, it's hand wavy. They're like, we need to have the outbreak happen again. How do we do it? Well, she's going to kiss him. Well, why would she do that? Let's make her sound a little more crazy. Let's not give a clear answer. Let's make the audience have to think about it. And to me, that's a silly thing to make us think about.
Yeah.
Again, that bothered me the original first time I watched the movie. It still bothers me now, but not as bad. I've seen way worse movies than this at this point.
Yeah. How did you feel about, you know, you get a name like Robert Carlyle, like, is this is one of those few examples of a zombie film where you have like an infected that is a character that exists throughout the film. He is constantly popping up as an infected. And how did you feel about that? That this like Robert Carlyle zombie is just so hellbent.
I like that aspect of the movie.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, they're infected, they're crazed, and they don't really have any control over their functions, and you know that he cares a lot for his children, and in his infected rage, I view it as his love for his children becomes his obsession with hunting them down.
Yeah.
Almost like it perverses his care for his children. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a wild thing.
I'm okay with it. We needed to have a villain in the movie. We needed to have a thing chase them. And him it's a character. You know what I mean? They could have just had it be regular zombies show up and chase them from room to room, but that would have been kind of boring. Having it be their father chase them from across the city, that's far more interesting.
Yeah. I completely forgot that that Jeremy Renner dies in this movie.
Oh, I didn't.
I forgot about that.
I remember him dying, and I remember being like, no, he's the one character I like. Why is he dying?
Yeah, and I mean, Rose Byrne's character dies kind of unceremoniously after the whole night vision sniper tension moment where I thought it was hard to... So, okay. It was hard to tell what was going on. I thought it was the daughter that was getting killed, but it was Robert Byrne or Rose Byrne's character.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. So when she died and I mean, this whole conversation about, you know, the wife being immune and them setting it up as like, maybe there's a trait that gets passed down, and they talk about, you know, the eyes having different, two different colors, pupils. Yeah.
Hyperchromism.
Yeah. Hyperchromism. And that sort of alludes to and is proven to be that the boy is immune as well. But it goes back to that conversation we had of like, okay, they may not turn into a rage zombie, but they can still spread it. And again, it's never answered about their mental state, but it is alluded to that, of course, they can still spread it. And then we see that we get to the end of the film. Michael from Lost, that was another thing I really remember from this movie, is like Lost was big and then he was going to be in this movie. And I was like,
sweet. I forgot he was in this movie completely. And then when I saw him in the helicopter in the opening, I was like, oh, that's right. It's Michael from Lost.
Walt. You know, that's the thing that immediately comes to mind. He does the thing where he's like, I'm not picking up these kids. Who are these kids? He was just going to pick up his buddy, sniper Jeremy. And he ended up picking them up, and they go across the English Channel to France. And then, of course, during the credits, it's revealed that the virus has spread to Paris and continental Europe. So no more islands. That's not great.
No.
So it continues to have those unanswered questions of like, well, he's not turning into a rage virus, but he is also can spread it. So like, you kind of just spread the virus, you know, and it's alluded that.
Well, we don't know how he spread it. You know what I mean? They could have landed. Something could have happened. Somebody could have given him a blood transfusion or something. And they could have not realized that he was a carrier and boom, next thing you know.
Yeah.
Like there's a million ways it could have happened.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, it is a typical sort of franchise film where it's like, we got to. Like the first film ended, like at least the canon ending was like pretty positive and uplifting, in that they were being rescued. But the ending of this one is like the world's done, you know? Like,
well, you do know that there is an alternate ending to the original, right?
I know there was one. I don't know what it was though. Can you remind me what it was?
At the alternate ending, our main lead character played by what's his name? Who's everywhere now?
Oh, Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy.
Killian Murphy. Sorry, Killian.
He dies in the original ending.
Oh.
And it's just the two girls that get away. And that whole scene at the end with them spreading the stuff out on the thing, it's revealed he's dead at that point, and it's just the two of them.
Huh.
And I think they showed it to test audiences, and test audiences didn't like it, and they changed it.
Now, do you think that, I think we've talked about this before, but the 28 years later is being set up as a new trilogy. So there's going to be three new films, with the first one being 28 years later. Cillian Murphy's back. It seems like it's more of a direct sequel to 28 Days Later as opposed to Weeks. But do you think they use the idea that 28 weeks later essentially confirms that all of Europe is going to be impacted?
Yes.
Okay. So you think they run with that?
I think they're going to run with it. I don't think they'll change that this film exists.
Right. How, I guess it's just like once you have a virus that spreads this quickly, like how do you contain it 28? So when you think about time, like in 30 days, all of Britain is eviscerated. And then 6 months later, everything dies. So 28 years later, do you feel like that's dealing with another reset of like all of Europe and Asia and, you know, Australia and North America are probably fine, you know? But I just wonder like how they're going to deal with that, you know?
I think it's going to be, I think the plot of the movie is going to revolve around the fact that probably all of Europe and Asia and probably into Africa are is all dead. And that it took 28 years for it to spread that far. Right. You know what I mean? Like if it took 28 weeks and it took 28 weeks for everybody to die off, you know that that's going to spread faster throughout the rest of the, throughout the rest of the world. Things that are isolated enough, like America, South America, the islands like Japan and in those Asian islands, I think they'll be fine. My guess is the story is probably going to have to do something to do with people having to decide whether or not they go back into Europe to figure out what to do. And maybe they find out that there's a mutation or something. I think there's plenty of potential that they could do that would be interesting. But I think what's his name? The original director.
Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle is involved. It will have more social impact than zombie impact, I think. They'll be more dealing with this. There'll be more social and worldview than just zombies. The zombies may not even be a major part of the plot, except that they still exist.
Yeah. And I mean, they have said that this idea for this trilogy is something on a grander scale, but more similar to 28 days later than 28 weeks later. I think 28 weeks later is a more
isolated
action. Yeah. And it's more action based too. Like it feels more Americanized as well than the first one. In that it is more of trying to escape the city before it is firebombed and then gassed and then obviously zombies as well. So like, there's a lot of like action going on. But I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I think that if we had watched, it's kind of funny to think, but if we had watched 28 days later first, I don't know if we would have watched this one. I feel like we would have watched that one and be like, hey, we did our homework. But now that we've watched this one first, I'm more inclined to go back and watch 28 days later. It's one of those weird things.
I agree with you. If we had watched 28 days later, I don't know if I would have wanted to bother watching this.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that we're watching them in this order.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because like it's still a great movie, but we know the first one is more interesting. Better. And but yeah,
the first one is unique as in it did a bunch of things and it was the first one to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It tackled a lot of concepts and ideas that I think people forgot or didn't think of. I don't want to say it's the first time I saw a fast zombie. I'm pretty sure there were other films that had fast zombies, but it's the first time I think I saw a zombie that ran as fast as they do in this, in these movies. In fact, I remember there being a lot of controversy about whether or not you could even call them zombies.
Yeah.
And I remember there being a lot of argument even by the director at the time that 28 days later, those were not zombies. They were infected people. And I remember there being this thing like, what's the difference?
Well, yeah. These days, there is no difference. I mean, like, I think the zombie genre needed to evolve.
I think even after time, the director came around and it has said in interviews that, like, yeah, there's zombies. I just don't like using that term.
Right. I do remember that. Like, I think it was some of the marketing or press tours where they were talking about it. And I mean, you know, like, I don't think 28 days later would exist without the zombie genre. So, like, to say, like, oh, you can't call them zombies, like, is it's almost disrespectful in the sense of, like, you're trashing what makes this film possible, you know, like I think you could acknowledge where you came from without, you know, completely bowing to all of the genre tropes. Like, I think the fact that they went with fast zombies, like at the beginning might have felt like a trope, but I mean, even just looking into 28 Days Later, like they credit it with a lot of revivals, not just the zombie genre, but like the revival of Resident Evil being popular again. Day yeah. of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead wouldn't have been remade without this. Like,
no, Dawn of the Dead remake is prior to this, but I'm thinking about the one we just watched, which was 2007. But yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, you're jumping around, and I lost track of what movie we were.
Yes, well, you're right. So yes, no, I'm like 28 weeks later. I think to kind of come back to that, I think it. I can understand why they didn't make a sequel right away because they kind of made the sequel.
Well, I don't think it was ever intended to have sequels, and I think after the success of things like Dawn of the Dead, and I'm trying to remember if. Slither was prior to this.
I don't know.
Slither was the year before this.
Okay, interesting.
So there was a revival of these zombie movies, and the zombies were getting faster, and things were changing, and Fox Searchlight probably had this the licensing to this still sitting in their pocket, and they went, "Why don't we just make a sequel?" And I guarantee that the director was like, no, I'm not doing another one.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I remember there being a distinct discussion with doing this movie, but he was kind of like, yeah, they wanted me to do another one. And I did my movie. I don't want to do another one.
I think the idea was always like, we need a story I want to tell, you know?
Danny Boyle is a very artistic director. He's not interested in a franchise or multiple movies, but it's interesting to me that now he's interested. And I think it has something to do with age. You know what I mean? When you get older, you have a newer perspective on things. And he's probably looking back at these movies, that first movie, and being like, I wish I had done a sequel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did a sequel to Trainspotting. So he did Trainspotting, T2 Trainspotting from 2017. But that's his only sequel he's ever done.
That's his only sequel. And that was done. I think I remember interviews with him where he said that, like, that was one of his first successful movies. And it's the film he was the most known for most of his career. And it ended in a way where you didn't know what happened to the rest of the characters. So, and Robert Carlyle is in that movie. So the fact that he's in this movie, which isn't directed by him, it's almost like this. There is a little bit of Danny Boyle in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm glad that we watched this one again. Like I really feel like we wouldn't have if we had watched 28 Days Later, but we will get around to 28 Days Later. We will catch it when it is available. Maybe we'll watch it before then, but stay tuned for that. But definitely check this one out. It's worth watching, and I look forward to news on 28 years later once Comic-Con rolls around, because I imagine we will get that. We'll get some news.
I think we'll get some news. I don't think we'll get any panels about it.
No, I don't think so. I think there will be news, but I think panels, it's a bit too early. That we're probably a year away from them getting. I don't know. That industry moves fast. Like TV and movies, you know, in comparison to another industry we love and know is video games. Like, man, that Last of Us Part 2 is moving quick in all things considered. So maybe there's something more that we'll see. But until then, we will keep everybody in the know as we discuss things on ZAMP. But coming up on ZAMP, because we had a shift in the schedule, we're rewarding your patience for a new episode by bumping up our wrap-up discussion on The Ones Who Live. So next episode, we will wrap that season up. Season, series, who knows, maybe it'll get renewed. I don't know. Lose of the opinion that it won't.
I think it's a bad decision if they do. I think that they'll lose all the goodwill they've built up if they do. So I don't think they will.
No. Yeah, I you're right. I mean, that was something we were talking pre-show. Like, I'm a little worried that whatever this series does, it could potentially ruin The Walking Dead. It could have a really great ending, and I could be like, all right, cut, print, ended there. It could have a somewhat middling ending. I'm like, oh, God, they couldn't stick the landing. It could be terrible ending, and it's like, okay, well, I can't do this anymore. So they're kind of stuck in my mind, and we'll see. We'll talk about it. Two episodes left as of this recording, so stay tuned for that discussion next episode. But don't worry, we're not trying to get out of what we promised we'd do, which is, you know, if you're a fan of something a little more terrible, we still have that Zombie Asylum film on the horizon, Aquarium of the Dead. And Lou, I watched the trailer for it as I was sort of finishing up 28 weeks later, and it does not look great. Looks really silly. Like a lot of like marine life, like octopus and walruses. There's even some crabs and stuff, like just really bad CG. I don't know. It's going to be rough, man. And with that, that is going to do it for this episode of Zombies Ate My Podcast. I want to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/zombiesatemypodcast. You can also visit us on the web at zombiesatemypodcast.com for show notes and all our previous episodes. You can send us an email and we may read it on the show, info@zombiesatemypodcast.com. Join our Discord at bit.ly/zampdiscord. It's the best place to connect with fellow listeners as well as Lou and I. This has been Zombies Ate My Podcast, and we would normally close out the show with some fine zombie knowledge from the busy zombie lord himself, but his power went out. Maybe some, you know, fine busy zombie lord knowledge would be like, make sure you have a gassed up generator. You never know when you'll need it. But I would like to throw in there that, you know, if you ever find yourself in the need of a quick getaway, helicopter works great, but a helicopter also works as a great weapon. So there you go. Weapon of choice, a helicopter. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great couple weeks. We'll see you soon.